Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicharian, former NFL scout and now Vice President of Football and Research at Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz, the godfather of football analytics and the founder of Football Outsiders. As always, we've got our producer, Justin Stein, on the controls. Aaron, it is nice to be off the road and back at home, but you are back on the move again, sort of.
Sort of. I'll be at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference tomorrow and Saturday, which is sort of on the road because I'm going into Boston and I am staying in a hotel for this, so I don't have to fight traffic to get to the conference tomorrow. But it's not on the road because I'm not getting on an airplane. And every week getting on an airplane seems more and more dangerous than it was the week before. So I'm looking forward to lots of fist bumps with people and saluting at Sloan rather than handshakes.
Yeah, nice that you don't have to take the flight. That's funny. It's a different type of flying safety, that a new hazard, I guess, in the air. For anybody, you guys heard it here first. Aaron will be at Sloan. If you are looking for the Football Outsider, you can find him there. And unfortunately, I won't be there with you. But Alex Vigderman of Sports Info Solutions, the inventor of the total point system for evaluating players, he will be there. So if anybody wants to pick his brain, you can find him, bother him. He's very friendly, I promise.
If you're going to be at Sloan and you're hearing this before Sloan starts, you can come see me. I'm actually going to be playing Sports and Analytics Trivia Blitz, hosted by Ken Jennings at 11 a.m. in room 210A.
Wait, okay, tell me more. Who are you competing against? This is awesome.
I don't know. I have no idea who I'm competing against, and I have no idea how much it's sports trivia and how much it's sports analytics trivia. And I'm going to admit that my knowledge of the specifics of things like NBA and NHL analytics are not good, but I volunteered to be in this game anyway, so let's see how it goes.
It's funny, we are currently hiring here for an R&D position. We had one of our R&D associates get hired by the Reds. Congratulations to Andrew Kine on that. But so we're hiring, and one of the tests that we have on our R&D test, one of the questions on the test is basically who invented which stat, and it has a whole bunch of different baseball stats and football stats, and I'm pretty sure your name is on there in the question, and you've got to connect who invented what. And I'm telling you, I couldn't answer half of the questions on there. It confuses me so much. So if anybody's applying and that one had you tripped up, don't worry about it. It's meant for the true savants. So hopefully you won't embarrass yourself for Ken Jennings there. Alex will definitely be there cheering you on. He loves trivia.
Yeah, it's at the same time as there aren't a lot of like analytics panels at the same time as this game. There's an innovation and entrepreneurship panel and a panel about name and image likeness in college sports. So I have a feeling that it's going to be well attended.
Nobody wanted to put up one of the really good things up against you and Ken Jennings. Like, they're not idiots over at Sloan. They know what they're doing.
Well, it was just Ken Jennings on the listing. They didn't know I was going to be part of it till like yesterday.
Ooh, that's exciting. I hope there's a video. I want to watch. All right. Well, have a great time at Sloan. As for us, let's talk about some football. We've been talking a little bit of combine, but we promised everybody that we would go in a little bit on a free agency preview. So today we wanted to talk about the different offensive free agents, some key offensive free agents at different positions. Next week we'll come back and preview the defense in free agency. And then a week after that, we'll already be a day into free agency. So should be an exciting 3 weeks here, kind of free agent March for the Off the Charts podcast. So let's start off right at the top. It's your guy. What do we make of Tom Brady?
Yeah, this seems to be the domino that makes all the other dominoes fall down in the world of quarterbacks, with a couple of exceptions. One is Drew Brees is pretty clearly going back to New Orleans. The other is I can't see that anybody imagines that Dak Prescott is going to actually leave Dallas. But all of the other dominoes sort of depend on Tom Brady. And there's a lot of debate going on about Tom Brady and how much his decline last year was Tom Brady's decline and how much Tom Brady's decline last year had to do with the players around him. I think it's a mixture of both, but I do want to point out two stats that attempt to separate a quarterback from his teammates in different ways. that have Tom Brady definitely still above average, but declining. ESPN's QBR, he was 16th among qualifying quarterbacks last year, which is down from his previous performance. And SIS total points earned, he was 13th. So these are stats that do attempt to separate a quarterback from the talent around them. And in both of them, in QBR, he was, you know, around where Jameis Winston was, a little above where Jameis Winston was and a little below where Kyler Murray was. And in total points earned, he was around just where Philip Rivers was and Jimmy Garoppolo. So he definitely has declined. And I just feel like putting a lot of your eggs in the basket of a 43-year-old quarterback is a real gamble.
Right. So there are a couple of situations where it makes sense, and there are a couple of situations where it makes less sense. For me, the most interesting part is all of just the Patriots dynamics, which I want to circle back with you on and get some of your unique take on that.
There's two issues of making sense. There's what makes sense for Brady, and there's what makes sense for the teams.
Well, for it to make sense for both, it has to be somewhere that's win now, right? Or that becomes win now by bringing Brady in. I think that's the only thing that has to go true. So I wanted to circle back. You talked about it, I think, spot on. Brady, 13th in total points this past year, right in between Philip Rivers and Ryan Fitzpatrick, Garoppolo and Deshaun Watson, right in that range. Sounds about right. And there is a decline when you look at it over the course of the last 3 years. It was, in terms of just strictly passing points earned, 131 2 years ago, 110, or I'd say 3 years ago, 110 last year, and 85 this past year. So you see a drop off, 26 from 21 from the first year to the next, 25 from the second to the third. So there is a drop off there. But like you're saying, he's still 13th in the statistic. This isn't a guy that's fallen off the face of the earth. And I think that's pretty realistically what Brady is right now. Physically, he's not what he was at his peak or anywhere really near it. He's not going to be mobile at all in there. He's not somebody that can push the ball down the field. But there's not going to be a better decision maker that you can find, and he'll still find ways to manage your offense and create a productive offense for you. So I think that falls into right where you're looking for.
I apologize for not remembering who did this research, but somebody over the last few months did a piece of research suggesting that the reason why old quarterbacks decline is a decline in the big plays, not a rise in their big mistakes. And I think you're definitely seeing that with Brady and Breeze. It's not that Brady is throwing more picks and doing more dumb things than he used to. It's that he's not making as many big plays, and he's flat out just missing guys in a way that he didn't.
Right. So when we look at quarterback aging and we try to strip out different aspects of that, the thing that we see change is that quarterbacks kind of get better at completing passes, and they don't really get worse at it. We see that rise in completion percentage, but we see the average depth of target drops as they get later in their career. And that goes exactly in line with what you're talking about there. As you're going to lose the ability to push the ball down the field, so you're going to be doing it less, but you're still going to have all of the ability to minimize your mistakes and all of that sort of stuff. So it fits into what we're talking about, even though with Brady, we're seeing it happen maybe 8 to 10 years later than we'd expect it to for a typical guy. But okay, landing spots wise, I'm interested in the idea of San Francisco. I think the structure of Jimmy G's contract makes it interesting that they could get off of that pretty easily. I think that we all know that going back to when I was in Cleveland with Kyle Shanahan, he was talking about Kirk Cousins. So if Kirk Cousins is the guy that he wants, he's going to be available in a year coming off that short contract that he signed. Maybe that is Brady in the bridge between now and Kirk Cousins' time. And you can kind of manage things out without having to go forward with the Garoppolo. You can get out from under that one if he's not what you believe he needs to be. Now, performance-wise, we had Garoppolo above Brady this past year. I'm not saying that's definitely the way to go. But from the perspective of what Kyle Shanahan might be thinking, that's one spot that I could see making sense.
I will say that as a Patriots fan, this is putting on my fan hat rather than my analytics hat, San Francisco is the destination that is most emotionally comfortable for me because it's the other conference. It's Tom Brady going home. It's Tom Brady going to a really good offensive play caller to try to like prop up the last couple years of his career. And it probably results in Garoppolo coming back to New England. So it gives you a replacement here that isn't Jared Stidham. So as a Patriots fan, if you said to me, he's not coming back, where do you want him to go? I would like to see him go to San Francisco.
One other thought I want to throw out at you. I don't know if this one makes sense, but what about Tampa Bay? Tampa Bay, we thought last year, oh, Bruce Arians and Jameis Winston, what a great marriage. These guys are both so aggressive. They're going to want to go down the field. He fits what he wants to do. And it was kind of maybe a little bit too much of that. And we saw all the turnovers that resulted. Maybe there's something to be said for more of a complementary relationship where there's a healthy disagreement between what you want the offense to be. That would that lend itself to something like we talked a couple weeks ago about the Bucs potentially being a big improver this next year? Is that somewhere that could make sense?
Obviously, there's weapons galore, but I just don't see Brady wanting, like, being able at the age of 43 to throw downfield enough to fit into the Bruce Arians offense.
Right, just literally the fit of fitting the skill set in.
I feel like there would be disappointment.
That was it. That was an interesting one. What are the other landing spots that you think could make sense there?
Well, from a business perspective, the team that makes most sense to pay the most for Brady is the Los Angeles Chargers, because they need the fame to put the butts in the seats and to get their piece of the pie in the Los Angeles market. And that means that it's not just a football decision for them. They could pay Brady more because there's more for them to there's more sort of at stake for them financially. And there are, I mean, there's good weapons there, but the especially if they can figure out how to bring Hunter Henry back, and we'll get to him later. But the offensive line is horrible. I mean, yes, they're going to add Trey Turner, but still the offensive line is pretty horrible. And that's not good for Brady at this point. Las Vegas has never quite made sense for me, because I can't see Brady's going to want to do his offense, and Gruden's going to want to do his offense. And is Gruden going to want to all of a sudden do things with the Ernie Zampezi language? Or is Brady going to suddenly want to do things all with that West Coast offense language? Like, one of them is going to have to learn a whole new language, and they both seem pretty stuck on themselves to not want to do that.
It'd be amazing if that was part of Gruden's overtures, because the reports are out there. If part of what they're offering is, hey, we'll do it all in your language, that would, like you're saying, that would be shocking, just knowing how coaches are and what we'd expect from certainly somebody like Gruden. I'm with you. I don't think either of those makes sense to me. I don't think the Chargers make – if I'm Brady, there's no way I want to go to the Chargers. So I don't see it from that perspective. The one that I keep coming back to is Tennessee. And we certainly have all the reasons at Syracuse basketball games to think that that might be a thing. The question certainly becomes, is he an upgrade from Ryan Tannehill? And I think that's a good transition into another free agent that we're going to talk about here, which is Ryan Tannehill.
Right. Ryan Tannehill is the biggest question mark, I think, even more than Brady, because you so don't know what you're getting. He was so good last year in limited time. But obviously it smacks of half seasons that we've seen in the past, like when Josh McCown had an amazing half season or Damien Heward had an amazing half season. But I do want to bring something up, because I did a little bit of research on Tannehill. And one of the things that drives a lot of these amazing half seasons for backup quarterbacks is that they have obscene numbers against pressure. Case Keenum, when he had that year for Minnesota a couple years ago, was phenomenal against pressure. And we know from research that a quarterback's performance in a clean pocket is more consistent and more predictive than his performance under pressure. So you'd look at Tannehill and you'd expect that he was probably really good under pressure and not as good from a clean pocket, because the clean pocket would, you know, then correlate more with his performance in the past. The opposite is true. Of 39 quarterbacks that I measured, Tannehill was number one in DVOA without pressure. But with pressure, he was 15th. So the kind of trend that we tend to see from these, like, make-believe awesome half seasons, like Josh McCown's from a few years ago and Case Keenum's Minnesota year, doesn't prove true with Tannehill. Tannehill was really phenomenal from a clean pocket, which is better correlates with future performance.
Yeah, I agree with you that Tannehill is confounding. If I'm the Titans and I'm not going in the Brady direction, I think that what I would have to do is say that I'm going to franchise Tannehill, because I think that there's no way I'm going to offer him long-term money based on what I saw last year. And there's also little chance that I would want to let him walk out the door and get nothing in return for him.
Yeah, so, I'm with you. I think that that's the best move, even though that then takes them out of the Brady sweepstakes. I think that the best move is to, you're risking that he really is this good, and then you have to give him more money when you have to sign him after this year. But would you rather do that with a year and a half of this performance than give him a bunch of money with only a half year of this performance?
Well, the only way I'm going Brady is if I've determined, and hopefully they've done some internal evaluations, there's a chance that as well as he played this year, they realized that that was unsustainable, that that was the best they're ever going to see from him, and they're ready to sell high on him for whatever that's worth. So to me, that would make it understandable from their perspective, saying, hey, we've got the defense right now. We've got this Derrick Henry thing. Let's franchise him and let's go get Brady in here because he's the one that can take us over the edge. And then we'll look into getting a young quarterback of the future somewhere else. If that's the evaluation, I could buy going away from him. I just can't buy going all in on him because if the evaluation right now is already, oh yeah, we've got these 10 starts and we think that we know what he is right now, I think that's crazy. This is a guy who's not as young as everybody has him in his mind. He's been playing in the league for quite some time now. And just going back over the past few years and the points earned, 2016, 53 points earned. Not bad, not great. 2017 was the injured year. 2018, negative 16 total points earned. That's how you get yourself shipped out of town. And with the Titans, 58 points earned in those 10 starts. But the volume is not high. This is not a guy who passed for very many yards, 286 pass attempts on the whole year. I think it'd be hard for me to believe that you could pass judgment and say, this guy is the quarterback of the future just based on what we've seen so far. I really struggle with that, especially when you turn on the film and you see this offense is not predicated on Ryan Tannehill.
I don't think he's ever going to be as good as he was in this half season. He was fifth in the league in passing DVOA. But
I think you can get in trouble paying a lot of money for a guy who's never going to be that good again.
It could be that he's really a top 12 guy. And if he's a top 12 guy, that's a good guy to have. I don't think he's a top 5 guy. I'm also, as long as we're talking about Tennessee quarterbacks and pressure versus not pressure, I do just want to point out, Mariota last year, and I realize this is limited sample size, 18th without pressure, 37th with pressure, which is a suggestion that perhaps he's not in the long term quite as craptacular as he looked last year.
What's his contract? He's a free agent as well?
Yeah, and he's going to go somewhere and be somebody's backup.
Yeah, pretty interesting. We talked about those points earned numbers for Tannehill getting into the 50s. Again, 2016 through 2018, 51, 52, and 54 points earned each year for Mariota. Really struggled this past year, just 9 points earned in the kind of half season there. So you saw where the struggles came in and it got worse. But if we just switch back and go a year earlier than right now, he was coming off a 69% completion rate, 7.6 yards per attempt season. So not the most dismal quarterback that we've ever seen, even though certainly he never turned into what we all hoped he would be.
I think he makes good sense as a backup for a team with a mobile quarterback like Arizona. I think he also makes interesting sense as a guy to push Mitchell Trubisky.
I like him better than Dalton for that purpose. All right. As far as the other quarterbacks, one guy I wanted to mention, I think we already talked about some of the big names. A guy that I think is going to keep flying under the radar is Teddy Bridgewater. He's really interesting to me. If the Colts don't end up bringing in Phillip Rivers, which I keep thinking it looks like is going to be the case just based on the relationship, it's the relationship there. And it makes a lot of sense to me. Phillip Rivers, I think, is a guy kind of in that Brady zone of, I don't think it's totally over for him, even though it's not what it once was. But I could see him being a very nice bridge guy as they transition to a younger quarterback. But the other thing I could see is if they buy on Teddy Bridgewater right now and think that he could come in and be the guy for them in the future, that could make for a pretty interesting Colts team as well. So that was one that I wanted to keep an eye on.
I like Bridgewater personally as he's my choice for who I'd like to see New England go after if Brady leaves and doesn't go to San Francisco.
Oh, I like that. That's pretty interesting. As opposed to going into the draft or going forward with just Stidham.
Let's knock off the Stidham talk. Stidham projecting him out of college came out as just a guy. I know the talk is that he was good in camp last year, but you're talking about a fourth round pick. You can't take a team that wants to be in playoff contention and depend on a fourth round pick from last year. Jared Stidham just doesn't. No, I would much rather have Teddy Bridgewater as my quarterback. And I like him better than Andy Dalton as far as people who could be the sort of replacement for Brady that would give them enough money to buy, you know, some wide receiver or tight end or something to help the quarterback.
Speaking of just a guy, we won't spend a lot of time on the running back position because we tend to categorically think that they're all just guys. As us analysts in this game, I say that with a wry smile, but Derrick Henry is a guy who the Titans must consider anything but just a guy in terms of the impact that he's had on their team. He's probably been the best running back, running the ball, not receiving, but as a runner in the NFL over the last 2 years. And what he did over the end of the season and into the playoffs was the foundation of everything that the Titans were doing. It seems like they'll either franchise him or Tannehill, or if there's a transition tag, then they can use both of the tags there. But this is just one of those really, really interesting rubber meets the road times when I think you've got to say a traditional model would say this is a $10 million a year player, and the analyst would never, ever tell you that any running back is worth that. If it is, it's got to be Alvin Kamara or Christian McCaffrey. It can't be Derrick Henry. So I really think that when it comes down to it, looking at how a team handles a situation like this is probably one of the most difficult questions that a team would face in 2020 when trying to position themselves to best succeed, while at the same time understanding that this is a sport that's existed for a long time, and there are people that are working as running backs coaches, and there's a market value that's set based on all the things that go on around the league. Where do you come in on how you handle this if you're the Titans?
If I'm in charge, just never give a running back a second contract. Just don't. I can't think of a team that's given a running back a second contract, a big second contract, and proven happy about it. Maybe Frank Gore? It just doesn't turn out well. And I mean no disrespect to Derrick Henry or the performance that he put on in the playoffs and all the tackles that he breaks, which, right, I mean, is a part of the running back performance that's separate from the offensive line, clearly, and is clearly the back himself. It never goes well to give a running back a big second contract. Let another team do it. The guy who even more stands out for me like that, whose numbers from last year really, I'm guessing, are not sustainable in the long term, is Kenyon Drake. He was really good after he went to Arizona last year, but that's only a few games. And I think in the long term, Kenyon Drake is just another running back who's just a running back.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think is easier. I think when you've got a guy that is not a all-pro level difference maker for your offense, I think it's really easy to remind yourself that quote-unquote running backs don't matter, and we can find guys like this. If you look in the Football Rookie Handbook, there's tons of guys. There aren't guys that are going to change your team. There's no Josh Jacobs in this year's draft, but there's a whole bunch of guys that can make your team better, that can play a role for you. And like you said, these are running backs. We can find these guys. It's not to say anything about the position other than that it is replaceable in terms of there are other guys out there that'll take that job.
Henry's a little different because there's two aspects of a running back that do make a running back stand out. One is receiving, if you're a Christian McCaffrey level receiver. The other is tackle breaking, if you're a Henry or Marshawn Lynch level tackle breaker. I just don't see that as aging as well as the receiving part.
Yeah, and then looking at the total points, which is, trying to really distill that running back value, we have Henry outside of the top 10 in terms of running back points earned, which a lot of that is because of the amount of value that's accumulated by guys because of their impact in the receiving game. It's much easier to have impact that shows up kind of not just on the traditional stat sheet, but on the advanced stat sheet, which what we're really measuring is how many expected points each play is worth, and then the division of credit that goes within that. you can accumulate value in the passing game. It's very hard to do that in the running game as a running back. And even when we look at some of the running statistics, Derrick Henry actually over the course of the season isn't even our top guy in terms of rushing points earned. We have Ezekiel Elliott and Nick Chubb tied for the lead, considerably above him. And then if we just strictly look at it in terms of like broken tackle percentage, the percentage of plays where you have a broken tackle, amongst guys with his usage, there are other players that broke a lot of tackles this year. There are your Chris Carsons of the world. There are your Josh Jacobs of the world, guys that actually broke a higher percentage of tackles than Derrick Henry did. So great player. Absolutely love him. Think he was a big part of what this team did in the playoffs. But I think if they're building sustainably for the future, I'm with you. I think you've got to be disciplined here.
All right, let's move on and talk about wide receivers. Which wide receiver stands out to you? I have a feeling I know who the number one wide receiver in this class is.
Yep, number one wide receiver is Amari Cooper, and I think it's really not even close. Huge drop-off after him. I still love A.J. Green, and I think he can play, but I don't think he's really going to hit free agency anyway. And what's interesting about Amari Cooper is that question, will he hit free agency? Because theoretically, if the Cowboys have to franchise Dak, then all of a sudden they've created a really big headache for themselves in doing the old trade for a player without re-signing him like they did a year ago.
It sounds like they are either going to sign Dak and franchise Cooper, or more likely franchise Dak, sign Cooper, and Byron Jones is going bye-bye.
So that would mean they'd have to get Amari done very soon. That'd be the thought in that case, get Amari done before free agency hits. And then, yeah, Byron Jones becomes hard to handle. I know some Eagles fans that would love them some Byron Jones on their team.
We have Cooper as the number three receiver last year in DYAR. So he absolutely had an outstanding season. And as far as receivers who are on the market, after that, the drop is either to A.J. Green at the age of whatever, 32, I believe, or Emmanuel Sanders.
Right. Big drop off there. If that happens, I'm definitely sticking to the NFL draft in terms of trying to fill that position going forward. We have Mari a little bit further down on the total points earned list, but some of that is volume related. I imagine you're saying he did better in DVOA than DYAR, or is he third in DYAR?
No, he was better in DYAR because of the volume. He's 10th in DVOA and third in DYAR. But again, this is not our stats. DVOA and DYAR do not attempt to split the receiver from the situation around him. And obviously, you know, he's got a really good quarterback, and the quarterback is behind a really good pass blocking line.
That definitely has something to do with it. Interesting there. He is further down the list in our numbers.
But I wonder, you still have him a bit above any other free agent wide receiver.
Oh, absolutely. Above the free agents for sure. Okay, kind of interesting there. I just wanted to check in because I wanted to see what your thoughts were on how the Cowboys had to prioritize that. Do you agree with that, that that's the way they have to go in terms of if one guy is the odd man out, it is Byron Jones?
It's tough. I think I do, simply because cornerback performance is less consistent than receiver performance. Obviously, Dak is the number one. Like, and I will fully admit to being wrong about Dak before this year. I was in the maybe Dak is too dependent on the people around him category after he struggled the last couple of years, but he was so good this year, and I don't think it's just because of the players around him that I'm fully on board with. They need to pay Dak the money. But after that, I mean, cornerback coverage is really important, but it's just less consistent. I mean, really, the guy who they should have not signed was Ezekiel Elliott, but that ship has sailed.
Absolutely. I'll tell you a guy I missed on, Byron Jones himself. I didn't love him coming out. I didn't know what the exact position fit was. And I think that was the struggle at first for him. But once he did get that figured out, if there's anybody that's been consistent on the back end for the Cowboys, he's done a pretty good job. Not a big interceptions guy, just three career interceptions, but doesn't allow a lot of touchdowns, doesn't allow a lot of completions or yards. And pretty consistent performance from year over year. He'll be in the 20s in points saved each of the last four seasons. So good, solid player there. But compared to Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper, I don't know who's going to impact Cowboys more than those two players outside of maybe the offensive line compared to Cooper. But so I'm with you.
Let's talk a little bit about tight ends, because there's a couple of really good tight ends. Now, I don't know if Hunter Henry might get franchised by the Chargers, but I do think it's interesting to look at Hunter Henry versus Austin Hooper. I just wanted to point out that Hunter Henry has been third, fourth, and ninth in tight end DVOA in his three seasons. Hooper was 14th in DVOA last year, but he was higher, I believe, in DYAR. Basically, Hooper has showed a better ability to stay on the field and has had more volume, but I think Henry is a more dangerous receiver and a more efficient receiver, and I think if I had to choose between these two, I would go after Henry.
Yeah, impressive numbers there when you talk about Henry. Top 10 DVOA three straight years. When he's on the field, he's unbelievable. It's a matter of that sort of thing. I agree with Hooper on the dependability thing. This is kind of the world we live in with tight ends. It seems like for most guys, you got to pick a wart that's going to be there. You know, there's your, obviously, George Kittle and Travis Kelce, the two Super Bowl tight ends who are outrageous, very different players. But most of the time, there aren't just guys without holes in their game running around. So I think this is the reality. And I think when you look forward towards the NFL draft this year too, you see prospects like that as well. Guys that can fit into one role or another, or maybe have some warts, but can bring certain advantages to your team. So that's the holy grail of scouting. That's why scouts so much care about finding those tight ends that have the ability to be a true, you know, a true dual threat guy in terms of being a blocker and a receiver that can be in line, that can split out wide. Because those are the guys that hurt you at the end of the day. Sports Info Solutions brings you the second annual edition of the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, with scouting reports and statistical breakdowns on over 280 college football players who are likely to be drafted or signed as rookie free agents in 2020. New features this year include unique and informative NFL team pages, research deep dives by the SIS R&D team, and, for the first time ever, the NCAA version of the SIS flagship football statistic, Total Points. At Sports Info Solutions, we collect and analyze college football players like it has never been done before. Whether you're a film junkie, an aspiring analyst, or just looking for the most comprehensive information on what your NFL team's rookies did while they were playing college football, this book has what you are looking for and more. Michael Lombardi, former NFL general manager and three-time Super Bowl winner, said, "This book is the closest fans will get to reading real NFL scouts reports, because it is detailed reporting with a complete understanding of what it takes to play in the NFL. Well done." John Park, the manager of research and strategy for the Indianapolis Colts, said, "Scouts matter because not everything that counts can be counted, and relevant data matters since not everything that can be counted counts. With that said, SIS creates relevant football data that matters. Please check out the SIS Football Rookie Handbook. It is available wherever you get books. You can get it on acta.com, acta.com. You can get it on amazon.com, or you can find it at Barnes & Noble. That's the SIS Football Rookie Handbook, comprehensive scouting and analytics guide, all of the 2020 NFL draft prospects, brought to you by Sports Info Solutions." All right, up next, we wanted to talk about the offensive linemen. Let's start off on the outside, talking about some of the tackles. A couple of interesting guys that I wanted to point out, because I think on the surface, a lot of people might look at a guy like Brian Bulaga and a guy like Andrew Whitworth and be saying, okay, these are kind of aging tackles, guys that have been good, but what have you done for me lately? Well, I wanted to point out what exactly they've done lately. Andrew Whitworth led the NFL amongst tackles in adjusted blown block rate last year at just 0.82%. So what is that on pass plays, I should say. So what is that adjusted blown block rate? Well, a blown block is not just giving up a pressure, but it's directly being beaten physically by the man in front of you to cause a pressure or a sack or anything else on a passing play, specifically these passing blown blocks. So he had a low blown block rate, but the adjusted blown block rate takes that a step further. And just like DVOA does a defensive adjustment, this adjusts for the quality of opponent you're facing. Basically, how often does the guy that you're up against cause a tackle to blow a block on average? And you use that to triangulate out the adjusted blown block rate. And when we look at that, the raw blown block rate is good. And he comes just behind Trent Brown for second in the league amongst tackles in terms of blown block rate. But when we adjust it for the quality of opponent being on that left side as opposed to the right side being a big part of it, his adjusted blown block rate, less than 1% there. Really, really great season for Andrew Whitworth, even if the Rams took a step back. Not the same story for Brian Bulaga. Brian Bulaga, number 32 in the NFL amongst tackles in that adjusted blown block rate. He's up at 3.19%. I think that this is a tale of two very different players, despite what the common fan might think. And some of the advanced statistics help bring that out here. So that was one sort of thing I wanted to look at for free agency.
The other, by the way, there's another sort of veteran tackle who's available, and that's Jason Peters. And I think that if you are a win-now team that needs a left tackle, yeah, Whitworth or Peters makes a good signing. I think for the Chargers, now that they've traded Russell Okung, one of those guys would make a good signing. Andrew Whitworth wouldn't even need to get a new house.
And for what it's worth, Jason Peters has been very good in the past. Last year, not his best season from an adjusted blown block rate perspective, up at 3.7% adjusted blown block rate. He was 44th in the NFL, along with other studs like Greg Robinson and his truckload of marijuana. So,
speaking of, yeah, Cleveland would be another landing place for these guys, although Cleveland might make more sense for a longer term, like drafting a tackle.
Right. And there are some guys this year that are going to be interesting tackle picks. I couldn't believe the workouts from not just Becton at the size that he ran at, but then seeing the speed. Who was it that ran 4.8?
Was it Wirfs?
Oh, Wirfs ran 4.8 at tackle. Just outrageous athleticism from these guys. So those are some exciting athletes. It'll be first round picks.
A couple of good names on the interior also, by the way. Brandon Scherff apparently is going to be franchised by Washington, which is, you know, interesting. He's a good player, but one who hasn't played 16 games each of the last 2 years. But I did go through the SIS blown block numbers for the guards. And first of all, Joe Tooney from the Patriots is freaking outstanding, and I'm going to really miss him. And I don't see where they would have the money to – they're giving Shaq Mason a lot of money, and I don't see where the Patriots would have the money to have two guards at really high salaries. So my guess is Joe Tooney is gone. He was top 10 in the league in blown block rate for guards or centers, and was third in the league with an even lower blown block rate in 2018.
But he's incredible in the run game, and we have him only behind Zach Martin amongst guards in total points earned amongst offensive guards last year.
The guy, if you miss out on Tooney, who might be interesting, who I know plays guard and center, and also had a good blown block rate last year and a really good blown block rate the year before, is Graham Glasgow from Detroit.
Yeah, not a guy that I've watched play a ton of football. That's definitely a surprising name to hear you say. I'll have to look up the Graham Glasgow stats. I don't even know where he's ranked in terms of total points.
I mean, there's no question he's the backup prize there. He's not as good. But if you need a guy, that's a guy who he played better in 2018 than 2019, but has played pretty well.
Yeah, 25 points earned in 2019, 30 points earned in 2018, 27 in 2017. So three years of pretty good production from him. And you see the blown block rate has fluctuated anywhere from 0.6% up to 2%. So pretty good numbers overall. He limited the penalties this past year, just one holding penalty all year. So pretty good stuff. Interesting name there to keep an eye on for sure. 27 years old. Interesting guy. All right, so that rounds out the offensive players. Anybody else you wanted to touch on the offensive side?
Nope, we'll do defense next week, and there's a lot of interesting defenders that are out there.
Tons of interesting defenders. After all the quarterback musical chairs get settled, that'll be fun to talk about. All right, we'll be prepping that next week. But for now, thank you to all of our listeners. Please help spread the word about the Off the Charts Football Podcast. Tell your friends, subscribe, rate, write reviews, and please check out the SIS Football Rookie Handbook. You can get it on actasports.com, actasports.com, and it's also available on Amazon. It's shipping now after a brief delay, but everybody should be receiving them and have them in their mailboxes very shortly, if not already. So check that out. We've got all the team pages so that you can find your free agent needs and drafting needs. And then, of course, all the scouting reports, all of the advanced analytics. And you can find us on Twitter @sportsinfo_SIS, @FBOutsiders. For my co-host, Aaron Schatz, our producer, Justin Stein, I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.